A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed. Oh.
Everybody has questions that aren't being answered.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dangerous World Podcast. I'm honored that you're joining. This is part two of a two-part series. I'm doing a lot of two-part series lately. I have one with Ron Weed, which is the second installment of that. First part of this was a YouTube exclusive episode. I don't think I'm releasing the audio file because it's very, very visual heavy. But he talks about a lot of occult numerology, and it's really, really interesting, man. Actually made a dummy like me understand some of the interesting kind of stuff that he was looking into. He was shown some really sort of Freemasonic numerology when he was a child, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in middle school or high school. And, you know, just really became fascinated with the whole thing. It connects with his personal life. I'm not going to give too much away here. Of course, I had talked with Ron Weed before we did this numerology little two-part series, and he's got an interesting story on its own. But, you know, setting up the whole numerological thing, we start talking about how they are used in some of these masterpieces by Mozart, by Mary Shelley, which is actually in the Patreon portion. And then we got Mozart and Da Vinci as well, okay? Started off really just focusing on Mozart, but then it kind of evolved into this three-part thing, kind of hitting the trifecta of a book, a painting, and a musical masterpiece. So, although we're not thinking that Da Vinci was a Mason, and Ron says that he is not, and definitively he says that, he has some serious, connections to this whole world, right? Now, Mary Shelley and her husband Percy are a couple of fascinating people as well, man. So I hope that you'll see the Patreon portion of this. I will make sure that there is a video file for that too. But other than that, man, just enjoy the interesting, interesting takes that Mr. Ron Weed of the Imaginarium of Thought has when it comes to numerology. This was a fun one for me, man. Anytime I can learn, I think that these are really cool. So I appreciate everything that he did, all the research that he put into this. From what I understand, he's not even doing this on his show, right? I mean, he just kind of like did a bunch of research for us here. So big, big props to him. Go and review his podcast if you can. You can do it on Apple. And then I believe Spotify has that feature now too. So leave 5-star reviews. Do it for me too if you can. It doesn't take too long. It really helps our podcast grow. And before we roll into it, you know, with your favorite part, the housekeeping, okay? But I got to do it. I got to do it. This is how I grow the show. So Patreon.com/Dangerous World Podcast. You can support my work. You can support all the fun guests by going and checking their Patreons out if they have them. But do mine first. Do mine first. Okay. We got Patreon.com/Dangerous World Podcast. $3 will get you full versions of every episode. Okay. $5 is going to get you the archive episodes, the ones that are old, the ones that are deleted off the free feed, ones mostly with Brandon as the co-host, the liberal side of the podcast when we started. Also, it'll get you weekly rants. The weekly rants are fun. I just kind of shoot the shit and I talk about problems and issues that are facing the world today. It's fun. So I hope to see you over there. And then the $10 tier is, of course, where you just you really just tell me how much you love me. OK, we also do the monthly group roundtable type things the last Saturday of every month. What else are the perks over there? I don't even know. Just check it out. You can go to the Patreon. It's free to visit it, and you can find out what the perks are yourself. You get a bonus episode a month, too. About to drop the bathtub episode. I did an episode in the bathtub inspired by Giannis Pappas, the great Giannis Pappas. And I'm really excited to share that. You're going to see my physique. It's male athleticism at its finest. I'll just say that. It's a one-of-a-kind body type. And, you know, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it there, okay? As far as content goes, it's either the greatest piece that I've ever released or the worst piece. So that's for the $10 subscribers. Been teasing it, trying to just get past the body shamers out there, okay? So it is what it is. We're gonna drop that here soon. And, yeah, so that's it. Also, DangerousWorldStore.com. I appreciate you, buying the shirts. Rocking one here right now. This is a custom one for myself. I am the one that prints these bad boys. So, you know, they're quality. They're cheap, but they're not cheap, if you know what I'm saying. They're inexpensive, I guess is a better way to say it. DangerousWorldStore.com. Also, guys, if you feel so inclined, check out Operation Tinfoil, okay? I'm wearing the beanie right now. It is a dope, dope little beanie. Silver lining inside. And I'm not saying that metaphorically. There is literally a silver lining inside to protect you from EMF waves. These things are harmful to your brain, son. They're going to make you think crazy thoughts, and they're going to make the government be able to control what you think, allegedly. Okay. We're not saying that this is going to prevent stupidity, but it'll definitely help from the harmful effects that are scientifically proven to come from 5G towers, Bluetooth, freaking cell phone, Wi-Fi, all this stuff, man. Check out weartinfoil.com. Okay. That's weartinfoil.com. And you'll get 20% off. Okay. See, that's what we call in the biz, an incentive. I say a low number, I lowball you, and then we go up a little bit. You're going to get 20% off. Okay. Quality hat. There are some products sort of like this out there. Dude, you're not going to find one like this hat. I love this freaking hat. I wear it all the time. Not going to be caught dead not wearing this hat, okay? I'm not going to be caught dead not wearing this hat. Think about that one. I'm always wearing the damn hat. Trust me, son. I love this hat, okay? WearTinfoil.com. Thank you for what the dude's doing out there. And I hope that you enjoy this episode. It's fun. It's a really cool episode. And this one will be obviously on the podcast feed. But I'd appreciate you going and subscribing to YouTube, okay? The YouTube is tiny. It's pretty new. I'm trying to grow that thing. And, you know, there's no reason I shouldn't have a few thousand subs over there, baby, trying to monetize. And if I monetize YouTube, you know, I'm not going to be pushing this shit as much. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be pushing my Patreon. I'm not going to be pushing my website. I'll still support and push these great companies that partner up with the show and with small podcasts like mine, because groups like Operation Tinfoil are trying to not only prop up small podcasts, it's a small American company that is doing good shit. So I appreciate what they're doing. Thank you a lot, Operation Tinfoil. Again, weartinfoil.com. Get 20% off. Hey, you can't beat that, dude. Protect your brain. Freaking look cool. You got it, right? You got it, dude. So thank you, guys. Enjoy this episode with Ron Weed of the Imaginarium of Thought. And I'll see you very soon. Also, again, roll into the Patreon. We're going to talk about Mary Shelley. That's the, it just kind of lined up perfectly. Talk about her and her husband's mysterious disappearance. She ties in with all this shit too. So appreciate everything that you guys do. See you on the Patreon. And then I'll see you wherever I see you. Take care and enjoy the episode. All right, folks, you got Ron Weed back here, and he is going to do the part two of the whole thing that we were talking about just a week ago. You know, we was kind of dropping some bombs when it comes to numerology. And this stuff's fun, man. The YouTube video is up for that first installment of this little two-part series. I recommend you check that out. It's kind of like a prerequisite. And we're going to get into three different pieces from different, you know, master. I mean, what do you call these people? I mean, these people are just really influential figures throughout time. We got Leonardo da Vinci. Then we have Mozart. And then we have Mary Shelley, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is going to be just kind of, you know, breaking down these three different works of art, these masterpieces, really, that have influenced culture. They've been, you know, referenced timeless, you know, over and over again. These things have been referenced. Where do you want to start with this whole thing, dude? Because this is, I mean, the numerology stuff is really complicated for a lot of people, myself included. And, you know, I want to get into wherever you think this whole thing fits in.
Well, it fits in because it's telling this universal love story that, you know, many of the most famous artistic, you know, inventor type geniuses or whatever, there's always this understanding of the spiritual laws and stuff like that, that kind of paints the picture for them. And so you hear it, it's like that whole thing, like it's the same story told, you know, numerous different ways. Mm-hmm. And with the numbers, that's when you think about it, like going into like the, you know, Bhagavad Gita or whatever, Gita, that famous Hindu book, that where it's Krishna talking to Arjuna, Prince Arjuna or something like, he says the only thing that's true is the soul, because it's the one thing that never ceases. He's like, no matter what, it could be millions of years before it changes, but eventually it'll change. And that means it's not real. Mm. The only thing that's real is this eternal dance of energies.
Yeah. And there's that whole thing where like energy can't be created or destroyed, you know, and something about that to me seems weird. It seems like maybe energy can be created and destroyed. You know, we get this science that tells us that, and we started to learn that science really isn't always true. So it's an interesting thing. At the very least, this kind of stuff is debatable. So I'm interested to see what you have here, because the numerology stuff, dude, that stuff's really interesting to me, man. And I think, you know, a lot of people seem to be trying to kind of like hack into this whole thing. And it does seem like just that. It seems like some computer program that it just takes like this numerological understanding to try to really understand the deepest, darkest secrets of our reality. That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say necessarily darkest, you know, it's just the core of it. Like, they talk about how scientists, if you believe in space, have said that like understanding, you know, things at a atomic level have helped them understand things in a massive scale, you know, to understand distant, you know, space and stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, with the numbers, like I think you know, we're taking it back, right? Pythagoras. And it's kind of what's going on nowadays is people are kind of turning the number thing to some sort of like, it's kind of, they're kind of making it culty.
Yeah, they like, are, dude.
Like Pythagoras, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I got this special number and this and that start, you know, I'm a prophet, you know, when really it's available to everybody. It's just some people maybe, you know, have a harder time understanding it. It took me a very long time to start paying attention to it. I mean, I've had this number thing, you know, the majority of my life, you know, for so long before I ever really started looking into it. And it didn't take until I started becoming spiritual that made me look at this number thing and start to actually, like, you know, take that first layer off of the logic and start going into more of like the unlogical, like the invisible nature of reality. And that's the kind of like the first step, is to understand like that what we see isn't all that exists, you know, that everything is actually at the most atomic level just energy.
So yeah, I mean, well, and dude, you show that with this, I'll actually bring this up right now. The atomic, you know, this was a reference that we had that you showed me, this thing here where, you know, protons are represented by this male energy, and then the what is this, the neutron, no, what is it, the electron, I'm sorry, is represented by the female energy, And yeah, you see that this is kind of the building blocks of our reality, right? I mean, numbers seem to be in everything. There's the Fibonacci code. There's all this stuff. And the stock market, I mean, this even operates off of the Fibonacci code to a sense, right? And you see it in like vegetables, like Romanesco. You see it in really any kind of vegetable that's out there, any kind of living form. There is numbers that seem to make up some things. And some of the most, you know, long-lasting, influential pieces of architecture seem to follow some sort of numerological code too. And then apparently some masterpieces in pop culture throughout the ages seem to follow some numerological references too. Whether it be, you know, through Mozart, through Da Vinci, through Shelley, these things seem to have patterns. And so it's just an interesting thing, dude. So yeah, let's roll into this stuff, dude. Are we
like starting?
Go ahead.
For this right here, but this is showing that at the atomic level, there's motion.
Mm-hmm.
There's action. So even though we can't see it with our physical eyes, it's still there, and it's still doing this eternal dance, you know, of energies. This shows that, you know, even objects that I guess aren't magnetic, but at the atomic level, it still is, you know, it's still rooted by this magnetic dance, you know, by this eternal dance of energy.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing, dude. Like, these things are moving around, right? And they're moving around perfectly. These things don't do anything wrong. These little, you know, these cells. I mean, cells don't do anything wrong. Even if it's a cancer cell, it's acting perfectly in sync with what's around it. And we see cancer as like one of the most horrible things, but I mean, it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do always. And it never strays away from that. Human beings, we stray from what we're supposed to do all the time. But I think that that's kind of because we don't know what the hell we're supposed to do. You know what I mean? We don't know. Like that's one of the gifts and the curse of having a consciousness, right? Is like, you don't really know what your purpose is. When you're an animal, whether it's a rat or a lion, you have a purpose, and you know what that purpose is, and you and your purpose is to live and to eat and to shit and to just like go through life, right? But humans always are striving for a bigger purpose.
Yeah, and that shows the difference in the energies between like what we're seeing going on here with the 5 9s, you know, the nucleus, and then the 5 0s is the neutron. The nucleus is the you could say like logic, you know, the application and construction of energies. That's kind of like everlasting and eternal, ever growing, because it's constantly moving, you know, like there's constant action. So while the neutron would be more of like emotions and stuff like that, our psychic side. And with that, when you're over emotional and you're bound in that, you lack progression, right? Because you're just moping around.
Yeah.
So also, when we think about magnetism, right? The North Pole, or the positive side of the magnet, is always represented by red. And the southern pole of the magnet is represented by blue. And if you look it up, they'll say, oh, there's no reason for that. It just is what it is. It's always been like that. But when you think about it, right, red is more of like fire. It's more of like progression. That's like the root and growth, right? While blue is represented by you know, the energy and the foundation, you know?
Yeah.
The fire and ice, the fire, you know, the dance or whatever. But so where this goes in, right? So we think at the root level, we think of that as like the feminine, like, and you say like that this is taking it back different, right? Because root does represent fire and everything like that, red fire. But here goes the thing. It's like the spark, you know, the action that gets you going. Because without action, you're just stalled. You become, there is no creation. There is no, you know, you're just it's a difference between being in the egg and breaking out of the egg, you know? So I'm just, this is like just, you know, taking it in like a cult, like metaphor, you know, like, but, with, you see how the poles are reversed here, right? Now, the North, what would represent positivity and the North is now, pointing down. If we're looking at it like on the chakra system, it's now red. So we're going down. So while South or the negative side of the pole is now going up, transcending into the blue, which would be the psychic side of the human psyche, right? Because red and blue makes green, and green is the heart chakra.
So and we talked about that too, Ron, where like the earth representing the heart or the green representing the heart. I mean, earth is just our heart, you know, with the letters rearranged, which is interesting to me.
So where this goes into, I guess we'll start with the first guy is Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's, you know, very famous. He's basically the archetype of a Renaissance man. And, he was an Italian polymath, which is a person of wide range of knowledge and learning. He was a scientist, a mathematician, an engineer, an inventor, an anatomist. I guess like the anatomy. Sorry, I can't read. Painter, sculptor, architect, botanist, musician, and writer. And in his time, like he was, you know, he thought of ideas like way ahead of his time. You know, it kind of, a lot of people say, you know, that whole term, like, born ahead of your time, you know, you could say that's very, you know, likely to somebody like Da Vinci. Cause in his time period, which was the 1400s, he died in, 1519. He thought of, helicopters, tanks, calculators, concentrated solar power, which we'll get into in the Da Vinci's Last Supper painting. And that also goes with the whole, you know, why would that be connected with the occult, right? Well, that what we just talked about with the atomic level and that eternal dance, right? Concentrated powers, you know, there's, also he thought of the double hole. Which is like instead of a regular ship hull, just being like one layer, it's like an extra outer layer of the hull to protect the oil cargo within. And also he outlined a rudimentary theory of plate tectonics, which is basically saying that back in his time, people believed that the fossils and stuff like that were found on mountains were because of the flood, the biblical flood. But he was stating that it was because of the mountain was actually rising up where it was below its formerly at sea level. It actually rose up above and it, you know, that's where the fossils came from regarding sea life. On the mountains.
Was he atheist?
They'll say he was atheist and he was against Christianity and all of this kind of stuff. But if you look at it, he wasn't atheist because atheist would mean to believe that there's only what you see. Mm. Right. And I think with him, it's like understanding God through the sciences, that blending of the esoteric and the logic, you know, the psyche and the logic, like showing that you kind of need both. Like you can't just be, oh, I'm psychic hippie all the time, because then what are you doing? You're just lopping around, getting high.
Yeah. Well, and you're just going through life and you're saying like, dude, I don't know. You know, I hate the idea of like this whole thing where it's like, dude, you know, spirituality is the best thing ever, you know, because to me, it seems like it's the same thing that the World Economic Forum tries to promote, but it's in a different way that they do it. It's like, you're going to have nothing and you're going to like it. And that's what these spiritual people try to push too. It doesn't matter if horrible things are happening in your life, accept it because this is a purpose. Fuck that, dude. I think that people need to try and fight and strive for the best thing that they can do. And yes, unfortunately, the way that we live right now, money is a big, big part of that. And so, like, I never hate on people for making a lot of money or leaving some sort of impactful, you know, or leaving some sort of impact on the world, whether it's even like in a selfish way. Everyone acts in self-interest. And I just think it's goofy as fuck when people start saying like, hey, let's just, you know, sit back and the universe is going to guide me. Doesn't matter if my account's negative right now, because money will come to me when I need it. No, dude, you got to go out there and you got to make it. Everyone wants money. You got to go out there and you got to take it. You know what I mean? So that kind of feeds into that whole thing, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's the beginning to every cult is them selling you to relinquish all your earthly possessions.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's crazy.
You know, and you don't want to get attached to those possessions where it's like what defines you, but it's the fruits of your labor. You know, you can't hate, but the enjoyment, it's enjoying life without being attached to it, mm-hmm. You know, without being controlled by its nature. But yeah, that's definitely like what you're saying with the spirituality. What's good with spirituality without practice, right? You learn all of this wisdom, you're so spiritually enlightened and stuff like that. What are you doing with it? How is that changing your community? Because like, if you want to, if you don't mind going back to that first Da Vinci thing I showed you.
This one here or which one?
Yeah, that one right there. You know, this is his famous something man, the Vivi Rivera, something man with a, something V, the V man. I guess I should have wrote that down, huh? Like, but yeah, so see how you have the circle and the square, right?
Yep.
So here you see that he has the two arms and the two legs. Right. And also the legs in the middle, that's kind of like a Masonic stance or something like that, I believe. Now, Da Vinci wouldn't have been a Mason. Now there's that Dan Brown movie, The Da Vinci Code and all that kind of stuff. The first records of Masons were like 1600 in Scotland, and the origins of them are, you know, unconfirmed type stuff. But Da Vinci being multi-talented like he was, into all kinds of shit, he would have been most likely a part of, you know, he would have known like builder guild builder guilds and stuff like that. He would have been into sculpting, and he would have known sculptors and masons and things like that at that time period.
What this is called here, not to interrupt you, Ron, it's the Vitruvian man. Yep.
Yeah. And you know, people will, as soon as you see this, 99% of people will remember it. You
know, everyone will know. Yeah. Everyone's seen this thing. It's the guy in the wheel, and he's got the four arms and the four legs.
So here we see that same dance going on again, right? Mm-hmm. You have the higher, the logic thinking, right? Side, which is the head. And then you have the feet, which are tethered, right? Which would be the 50s. And then now you have the hands. Now, where would the hands be? The hands are the application, which is your ability to create, right? How it's circled around. That's you being like your arm width and stuff like that, because you changed the world, right? With your touch, essentially, right? Your application to the world morphs the world. That's how you are, you know, the creator of that. That's, you know, like that. But then you have the square, and that's like your grounding, right? Mm. That's like your tethering your foundation to the reality. So notice also how the hands touch the square and the circle. And then also at the bottom, it's connected the same way with the circle and the square on the where it's outlined. So, where this is like the male and female energy again, right? The divine masculine and the divine feminine. And, you know, not to get, you know, perverse or whatever, but the legs spread apart, right? And then the legs stand down you know, that's kind of like some missionary position on yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. No, I mean, yeah. And yeah, I mean, no, dude, let it go. You know what I mean? Like, fucking throw this shit out here. Cause this is the stuff that, this is interesting to me too. I mean, you know, you have this dude's hands on the top. He's touching both the circle and the square with his hands. And then his feet that are straight are touching the circle and square on the bottom. So we can assume that that's the man, right? Man's mm-hmm. arms are higher up, right?
Oh, no, I think the man's arms would be the lower arms.
Really?
And the female's arms would be raised up, yeah. And the reason why is I think with men, we're more grounded in our approach, I guess, with our touch on reality, where, you know, female approach would be more of a...
eternal, or like, yeah, like...
like, yeah, like a loving and, you know, more of a higher... type touch, where men, we might be a little rough around the edges, but we're trying to do something, you know. It's not like we're doing it on to be mean to you, it's just how it's we're doing it, you know. It's getting done this way. So we're a little rougher with our approach. So I feel like that would be more on the lower.
So to be clear here, the square represents reality and the circle represents like eternity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that's the, because with the circle and the square, that's the whole thing about that whole, like, so you have the square and the circle and the triangle,
mm-hmm.
like that whole thing, like the three shapes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, the square and the circle, that's like you being the creator to the, that's like you're with your self, right? Represented by the circle. Your application to the world, like how you're moving through the world, that's your ability to create and be the creator and shape mm-hmm. things, right? Create something, like the whole alchemy, shaping something with your hands and things, or even your mind, and just your, when we say touch, it doesn't happen necessarily. It could be your words that you write down on paper or whatever. That's your ability to create, right? Your feet to move, and then your hands to shape. And then the square is the reality that you're now applying your form to and morphing. And then of course, where the triangle would be the, of course, the, you know, how we say the, or in the previous episode with the 369 and stuff like that, is you have 2/3 physical and then 1/3 non-physical, non-visible, you know, the hidden, you know, they talk about the hidden enemy, the hidden, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You can't see it.
You know? Interesting. And, yeah, dude, it's just, it's crazy to me to think about how, I mean, it'd be really interesting just to like, if this dude, did he ever write down what this meant? Da Vinci?
Oh, it might be in those words right there, but I don't know. I'm just kind of taking it from my
own. Yeah, it's just so crazy, dude, because this is something that it's considered a masterpiece, but like you look at it and it's like, dude, there's so many like better pieces of art throughout history. But this thing is, like you said, it's referenced a lot. And it just seems like a very basic thing. So there's clearly some sort of esoteric meaning to it, right? Or some sort of occult meaning to it.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
But I was gonna say, even with the Last Supper painting and stuff like that.
Let's go.
One of the top people who's in the researching and stuff like that, his saying that the secret to the Last Supper is that in this time there was a lot of painters and stuff like that, and they were all doing Last Supper paintings. And then Da Vinci, you know, did his version of the Last Supper painting. And in this Last Supper painting, he left out the halos because in the original paintings, people would put halos behind all the disciples and behind Jesus' head and stuff like that, right?
Okay.
So the expert saying that him leaving that out of his painting is showing that he's saying that, oh, Jesus and all his disciples, they're just regular men. That's all there is to it. That they're just regular people, and that don't mean shit. that like all of this don't mean shit, right? But going into the whole magnetic energies, right? And Da Vinci would have been into he was a mathematician, and you know, so he would have been into, you know, possibly he understood the same calculation that I'm breaking down to you, right? With this whole energies and stuff like that. So if you look at Jesus's attire, it's red and blue. So, you know, that could be an homage to magnetic energy.
Mm.
How Jesus was the master of the two sides of the physical and the non-physical. And through that, he had the understanding of that magnetic energy, which is, you know, could be from the sun, because I guess the sun, it produces this radiation, like the light radiation, where everything is essentially green light, like at a photosynthetic layer or something like that.
I've heard that it's purple, and so like when purple, and the reason that plants are green is because purple is at the opposite end of the spectrum as violet. That's why they call it ultraviolet. You get red, blue, and then you do get some green light. But the reason that plants turn green is because of the sun's energy source, and it makes these plants turn green. Is that along the lines of what you heard?
Yeah, and it has to also do with why the aurora borealis mm-hmm. is that green color as well.
Well, and if we're going to get real weird, they say that that's like the inner sun, like the sun inside the earth. And that's like a reflection. Mm. And that's why people can't get up to that area, like in the North Pole and shit. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting thing. Obviously, we know that we can't go to Antarctica, but that's at the South Pole. And to kind of touch on what you were saying, when you're speaking about Jesus with the red and the blue, he's wearing like what looks like a red shirt with like a blue sash over it or some kind of shit. I mean, yeah. You know, and mm-hmm. it represents some sort of duality, clearly. But then that can also be like the sun and the moon, right? I mean, like there's all kinds of things that you can interpret this. And everyone's seen this painting. I mean, but what's interesting.
And it was, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off again.
Oh, no, I was just saying what's interesting was this thing that you pointed out, and we alluded to this in the last episode. At the top, there's these 36 little squares, right? Mm-hmm. And then that plays into the whole 108 or 216 thing with the black cube.
Yep, magic square of the sun.
Shit's weird, dude. And that was a good find on your part.
I wanted to go over the... a little bit like history, I guess, about the painting. Or whatever, just kind of get an idea of it. Like, actually, this painting was actually a failed experiment of Da Vinci's, because a lot of the painters at the time, they would paint on wet plaster or whatever. Where Da Vinci, he decided to try tempura paint on a drywall, and decades after he painted it, it started to fall apart and peel off. So actually, over time, it's been restored by experts who figured something about it, and some critics claim that only a fraction of this painting is actually to Da Vinci's original what he originally had painted. So what we're seeing here is actually remaster of his original. So this painting also at one time this area was actually a monastery in Santa Maria del Grazia Monastery in Milan, Italy, and it was a stable for Napoleon at one time, like his soldiers and horses and stuff like that. Yeah. And then also the Nazis actually bombed this monastery during World War II. But the surrounding walls were reduced to rubble, but this wall survived.
Wow.
Where Da Vinci painted on here.
Wow. So this was painted on a wall.
This was painted on a wall. Mm-hmm.
Wow, dude. So it's almost like they were like targeting everything else but this, right? Or they tried to actively keep this standing.
Well, it could be that they might have been actually trying to destroy it, because, you know, how the Nazis were trying to acquire all spiritual type knowledge while destroying it in the process.
And they were very anti-Christian, right? They were anti-Christianity in every way. I mean, what's the guy's name? Himmler, right? Heinrich Himmler. He thought he was a reincarnation of Heinrich the Valor. And or the Fowler, sorry, Heinrich the Fowler. And I mean, this was an old German ruler under like the some empire. And he took his old castle, if I'm not mistaken, and he tried to recreate it as a pagan site of worship when it was previously a Christian site of worship. And then they just tried to like just kind of wipe out the Christian history and make it a pagan thing. And this is like one of the reasons that I'm anti-pagan. I've got some friends that kind of lean into that paganism, which I'm not saying that they're Nazis if they lean into that shit, but I'll say anything that Heinrich Himmler or Goebbels or Hitler believed in, I probably don't agree with personally. But at the same time, I'm not as educated as I'd like to be on that, because you know, the same shit that's going on with Putin right now with the Ukraine. I'm not a fan of Putin personally, but it seems like Ukraine's doing some shady shit too. So it's like, what side of history is actually the right side? It's really difficult to sift through this information.
And like, you know, we were talking about how much history will actually survive.
Yeah. Dude, it's so hard to know, right? I mean, and that's the thing, man. Like, you know, all that matters is who wins. And that's where history comes from. So, and everyone knows that. I'm not saying anything crazy here. It's just like, dude, you know, who's to say that, and it sounds so fucked up to say, but who's to say that the Nazis weren't doing something that was right? Who and I'm not saying killing Jewish people is good, but like, were they actually doing that? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a Holocaust denier. Again, I don't really look into this shit, but it's so tough to know what is right, because dude, our government is the worst government in the world, I think, in my opinion. It's just tough to know what's right, dude. And that's what makes this whole thing really difficult. Looking into hidden history, it's tough.
Yeah. And see, what a lot of people don't fail to understand is like, you know, people like that, they have twisted ideologies where they think they're right and they think they're doing the right thing. Right. So in their way, they are, they're doing God's will. It's like where the saying God loves all his children, right? Mm-hmm. They're basically taking advantage of God's never-ending love, you know, his ability to forgive and redemption, all this kind of stuff, because they're driving what they're doing with purpose.
So, well, yeah, I mean, you see what I'm saying here? Like, if the Nazis were to have won World War II, America would have been the one that killed the 6 million Jews, right? I mean, like, they just would have flipped that story around, and everyone would have believed that. And so you know, Hitler took that swastika, and he, I mean, that the swastika, it means, I think, like love and light, right? I mean, like, that's a Sanskrit symbol. It's a really positive symbol, and he was using that symbol for his people, right? You know, the Aryans. He thought that he was doing God's work, like you said. So, dude, you know, if they would have won, the narrative would have been different. And that's just what's so, it's so confusing when you look into it and when you try and come at it from like a non-biased perspective, which is really hard to do, rightfully so, with the Nazis. But I mean, if it would have worked out the other way, we wouldn't be talking about this in that same way.
Well, you know, they were coming at it, I guess, with a Holy Roman Empire type approach.
Sure.
Where, oh, we're good. We're the good guys. We're the God's men and holy men. You better do what we say or we're going to fuck you up.
Well, that's what the United States does right now, too.
Yeah. And so that's basically what they're trying to get back to. They're trying to get back to the old Holy Roman Empire days and stuff like that.
Well, that's what Steve Bannon and them are doing right now, too. You know what I mean? 100%.
And where that goes in is because you can promote religion and have build up religious followers who aren't spiritual, and they're following religious doctrine as like a program. You know, they're basically using it as a way to program their life and rules to follow. So that way, the leaders of these organizations and stuff like that can do as they please and live as mm-hmm. kings. The high priest of the ancient times.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy shit. It's crazy. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about with Da Vinci?
Oh yeah, and well, with Da Vinci, a lot of his stuff actually barely made it because he was always, fucking, had a lot of disasters. He was always experimenting on shit, always trying out new techniques and stuff like that, and actually was a chronic procrastinator.
Really? Well, so am I.
Yeah, this guy who was considered a polymath, so talented in all these areas, sometimes he would just say fuck it and just wouldn't want it, because he'd be so interested in doing this thing, and then all of a sudden something comes along and takes his interest, and now he's like, I don't want to do that other thing, I'm focused on this thing now. So he take him a while to circle back and finish up what he was doing. He just gets taken by the flow of the current, in a way. Sure. His knowledge. So he was with science and stuff like that. He greatly helped the advancement of knowledge in anatomy, civil engineering, optics, and hydrodynamics. Hydrodynamics is the way water flows and how bodies move, or are affected by the pressures of water and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then, but going into the optics, which actually has to do with this painting here, he actually, when he first started painting this picture, he put a nail in the right, where Jesus's temple would be, the right side of Jesus's temple. And that has to do with something with the mind and like the logical side of the brain or something like that. And so from there, he took a string and tied it around that point, and he pulled it out and drew the perspective that way, right? That the center, that point of Jesus's head is the centerpiece of the whole painting.
The right because temple.
The right temple. Jesus is, Da Vinci, was all into like detail and, perspectives and the way the light moves and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With his, all of the studies and stuff. With the magic square of the sun, right? You see how Thomas is the guy pointing up?
Thomas, yeah. The guy in the back with like the curly hair.
Yeah, with his finger pointing up.
Right to the right of Jesus for the person looking at the thing. Yeah, his left. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's saying, they say, oh, that's him pointing up at God. But now that we understand from the last episode, the magic square of the sun and all that and its applications with things, for people who hadn't seen that video, you can go back and learn a little more about it. Jesus here and this part right here is represented by the sun. And the sun is what produces natural light, right? That's why what we're seeing is Jesus, where Jesus's head is placed, it's in the horizon, right?
Yeah.
He has it opened up. And
he
has it going back. So that's depth. That's turning this image from a 2D plane to a 3D plane, right? Because that's applying that deeper, that looking through the veil and seeing more application thing. So the left side of the room is dark, and the right side of the room is light here, right? As you can see on the walls.
Yeah.
So that's kind of backwards with what this thing is saying here, with spring going to winter. But I'm not saying it's wrong, because what we'll see here is winter would actually be the dimmest light, right? So winter should be on the opposite end, where it's the shaded, darker side of the room. And spring should be, you know, the spark of that new light, and that would be the right side of the room. And Jesus, of course, the sun, and summer at the highest point. So what we're, or maybe it is going, it should be the other way. But see, I'm not saying it's wrong, because also, like what I was saying earlier with magnetism, the right side of a magnet is supposed to represent the positive side, the north, and the blue represents the south. But if you zoom in, can you zoom in on Jesus's hands?
Yeah, as above, so below.
Yeah. Look how he's pointing down with his right hand. And then with his left hand, he has it exposed, pointing up, you know, just like with Thomas.
Yeah. Or Baphomet.
Baphomet.
I mean, that, yeah. Baphomet's doing that shit too, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, true. Yeah. But also, if you see his right hand, mm-hmm. Look how him and Judas are kind of like reaching.
Oh, yeah, that's Judas right there.
Their palms are like towards each other. Right?
So Judas is the guy, again, with the curly hair, looking at this lady-looking figure.
Yeah, and the lady was, that's actually, I think, John, if I'm not mistaken, but according to Dan Brown of the Da Vinci Code, it's supposed to be Mary Magdalene. But John was just a feminine-looking man, and he was always represented that way.
So Judas reaching towards Jesus here, that represents like the negative. Even though his hand is supposedly to the right, that's supposed to be representing positivity, Judas is reaching towards that, so that makes it negative? Is that what you're saying?
Well, Judas was actually Jesus's closest disciple.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's even talks about how he knew what Judas is going to do. And he would actually have secret talks with Judas. I don't know if you heard about the Gospel of Judas.
No.
It's one of those Gnostic texts. And the reason why it's controversial is it kind of says, it's with the one that kind of says, I think the God of the Bible is the bad, you know, he's demiurge or whatever type thing. Maybe the Torah, you know, the First Testament, the Old Testament. So Jesus with the right side, right? That's the application of magnetism, because with the palm up, we're going to ask above, so below. That's why the negative side is going up and the right side's going down.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the counter energies, right? Hmm. Like, you know, how a magnet works, right? You can't have the both batteries facing the same way, essentially, you know, to apply in whatever, because you're trying to create that circuit, right? So that's basically what he's showing here. He's showing like a circuit. So the positive side going towards Judas, you know, because they say that the stuff he told Judas, you know, the secret teaching of Judas or whatever, could this be saying that Judas has, you know, he passed on, like handing over that knowledge to Judas, as you see, you know, you see the bread on the plate, you know, and all that, you know, could that, you know, be, you know, because it could be anything, right? I think one guy, he even had it write out "send nudes" on the both sides. But can you zoom out to one of the other images of this?
Which one?
I guess the one above, or. Yeah, the one below. So, yeah, so here is basically what he did, right? Where I talked about with the string and the him stretching out.
Okay, yeah.
So on the left side, you have four, you know, the rack, you know, little displays, well, whatever you would call that, little sheet on display on the wall, like a little, you know, rug, you know, like they have in the painting. Look on the walls in the painting for the view. Yeah, so there's four, right, on each side.
Four of these little, like, window-looking things, but they're tapestries, right?
Tapestries, that's the word. And so that's eight, right?
Yeah.
So that's showing, again, that eternal dance going on.
The figure eight.
Yeah, the yin-yang symbol, and that's what we went into in the last episode about eight and word, you know, how it's infinity and all this kind of stuff, and how it's also nine is separate on its own throne, and then one through eight is like the kingdom, essentially, mm-hmm. right? Like the reality. And so if you notice the windows in the background, how the window to the left is opened up, and then the window to the right is kind of like obstructed.
Yeah, with someone's head, yeah.
So the left side of that's so the open, unobstructed view is on the dark side of the room.
Yeah.
But then the on the light side of the room, the window is obstructed.
Oh, shit. So it's like it's easier to go to the dark side than the light side.
Yeah, and it's also showing that yin-yang aspect, right? The wow. light and the dark, and then the dark and yeah. So it's yeah. essentially Eastern mysticism in, you know, 14th century European art.
Damn. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And in this, in the painting right below it, or the picture below this one.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Really quick before we move on to that, if you look at this little window up here, you see little eight little sections. Represented in that window right above Jesus too. You get one, the first and eighth are real small, but you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in that too. So that's kind of interesting. That's another little thing. This one right here, you're saying.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing, I guess, because it kind of popped in my head is remember in the previous episode where I drew out the dots and we made the those two geometrical patterns with the numbers and the columns and stuff like that. That's an accumulation of 13 points. And there's 13 people in this image.
Yeah. And yeah, Jesus and his 12 disciples, yeah.
Yeah, and there's in that to create those patterns, it took four dots on the outside ends and five dots on the inside. Kind of showing this same thing of like a center point.
Yeah, dude, that shit's crazy.
And what this is here now, what we're showing is how it has the crowd of people looking up at the painting.
Yeah.
And the thing I was explaining about how Da Vinci did it with the string and the nail is because he wanted to draw you into the painting. He wanted to draw you into that focal point in the center. So this is essentially here. This is creating a cross. This is the unraveling of the cube because his behind Jesus's head is the depth, right? That's the top of the cross, the top square. And then the three squares that represent the, you know, the arm of the cross is the painting, the left side, the center, and then the right, the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
The space in between the painting and the people is the chasm, the invisible, you know, that how we talk about with the glue aspect and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Space in between, that's that part below the arms. And then you are the bottom of the cross. Looking, so the painting is essentially you standing there looking up at the painting is actually creating a cross, which we know that a cross is a cube unraveled, and that goes in with the, you know, 6 times 6 magic square of the sun being a cube at the top, you know.
Wow.
So where this goes in is right light, the light source, and Da Vinci, he was a scientist who studied optics. And, you know, with his also his understanding of anatomy, he would have known how the light absorbed, how our eyes and our brain absorb light, right? So if you don't mind going to the painting, the image below this one.
Yeah, this one is really interesting too.
So at the top there, that's the light source, right? That would be the red and the blue. Again, you know, we it just happens to be red and blue again, you know. But that's the light source. So that would be behind Jesus' head, right? That's the focal point that he was creating. That's the source of the light.
So let's go back really quick. So look at how this is, how you have the red on the left side and the blue on the right side. And then go back here to, you know, the best picture that we have. The red on the left side and the blue on the right side. That's what you're referring to. That's why he's saying it just happens to be red and blue again. Like these are like fire and ice opposites, right? And this has kind of been the story throughout time, ever since people really started getting, you know, into color. Mm-hmm. And trying to associate color with meaning. And yeah, we're seeing that right here. So, and before you even say it, the right side of the brain is correlating to what you see when you're looking at something on the right side. So that's why Jesus's right temple would be the focal point, because the red is seeing that side, right?
Well, I think that, I mean, honestly, the colors actually matching up was coincidental that it worked out that way. It's like, I didn't even think about that until you pointed it out.
Well, I just thought that because you said it just happens to be red and blue again. But I mean, it just makes sense to me.
Yeah, the dance of the energy that, you know, the red, the masculine, the blue, the feminine, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the top there, that's the point of light. That would be behind Jesus' head, the light source coming in. That's why I made it the focal point. The left eyeball would be the left side of the table of us looking at the painting. The right eyeball would be the right side of the painting. And obviously, we're going to assume that Jesus would be the third eye, right?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, you know, element, the morphing of the logic and the psychic. And then so how it's connected with the painting. So we're going to say that two eyeballs and a third eye, that's the Last Supper painting, what most people would see, the uninitiated, right? The illuminated would assume. So that's the table, the optic chasm, how the nerves going to the back of the brain there, that's the space in between. That's the connection from the you and to the painting, right? Us looking at the painting would be the visual cortex at the back of the brain. So essentially, when you're looking at Da Vinci's painting, that is exactly how your light, how your brain processes light. So what you're doing looking at the painting is what he's showing you in the painting. Look at that. I mean, I don't know if that. So basically, like the painting on a surface level, it's just a Last Supper painting, right? Nothing to it. Just they're just people, regular human beings. It's a
classic piece, yeah.
But then when you break it down in an occult, spiritual type aspect, you can see how someone with his knowledge of optics and the anatomy, what, you know, because he liked to do stuff like that with his artwork. You know, he was fascinated about, you know, he would merge, you know, these worlds. So in his process of the Da Vinci Last Supper painting, he's basically showing us how we process light. You know, I feel, you know, and there, I don't know if anybody else ever, you know, says this, but it just is one of those things that just kind of like you look at something. At that painting, you see the logical explanation is it was just a dinner and he just painted a dinner. But we know that someone like Da Vinci, he liked to keep, you know, put little secrets and hidden things in his paintings. And to think that all it was he left halos off of their heads to show that they're human just kind of seems like a cop out to me. And that I you know, I don't want to hate on that dude because he's like the number one Da Vinci expert in the world, but that kind of feels like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the way that I think that you broke this down right here is so much more intricate, and it makes sense. And then I hadn't even really known that your vision really comes from the back of your head. It makes sense why, I mean, you know, getting hit in the back of the head. I mean, you can go blind getting hit in the back of the head. It makes sense. Yeah, seeing this.
For people to think, actually, most people, and maybe he was trying to show that most people, when you're thinking only through the front of your eyes, right?
Yeah.
You're only, mm-hmm. But if you can actually concentrate and focus your attention to the back of your brain, and your vision will actually become more clear. Like, wow. Your clarity of sight. I don't know. It's a weird thing, you know, because you're more in tune with, sure, how your brain and body works and stuff like that.
Yeah, dude. That's some deep shit, man. It's crazy. It's crazy to think about how in depth this can be. But obviously, I mean, the dude, so you said he was not a Freemason.
No, he wasn't, but he most likely would have known stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, so he would have known about. He was so ahead of his time.
Yeah, stone. He was into sculpting and stuff like. So he'd have probably known stonemasons, and you know, that's where that stuff.
They might have just told him because he had that fucking big dick energy, dude. He's a fucking G, huh? That's crazy, yeah, man. Wild.
But yeah, I guess you want to go to the magic flute now.
Yeah, so, dude. Let's get into that. Let's see where are we starting here. Where are we going up to?
The guy, the
first guy. Yeah, dude. So what's interesting about the magic flute, and I'm gonna pee after I ramble about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
The magic flute is pretty interesting if I can find the proper one. Oh yeah, here we go. So we talked about this a little bit. You know, Mozart partnered up with this Schikaneder, if I'm pronouncing his name right. This dude was like a theatrical master of his time. Think of like your favorite like musical producer, and this guy, you know, he's that of this time. And instead of just making a musical piece, Mozart partnered up with him, and they made like sort of a musical of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. And you see some serious symbolism here. And Mozart was a Freemason, as opposed to Da Vinci, right?
Yeah, so, and I also believe Schnitter, or whatever his name was as well.
Yeah, Schikaneder. I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it. It just looks like how you pronounce it. An Austrian dude, from what I've gathered. But this was performed for the first time in Vienna, Austria, 1791. And I think it was just a couple months before his death, right? Yeah, a couple months before he died, the 30th of September, 1791. He died in December. So kind of interesting timing at the very least. But yeah, dude, if you want to roll into it, I'm going to go take a piss.
Yeah. So Da Vinci, not Da Vinci. We're moving on to Da Vinci. Mozart, he was born, you know, at the beginning of the, I guess you would say, the, or around the time of the Age of Enlightenment. Because this would have been, he was born before the American Revolution, and he was, you know, he died, you know, after we already made our Declaration of Independence. And his full name, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, he was a musical prodigy. I think he wrote his first songs when he was like 6 or 7 years old. He was just masterful at the piano and all sorts of instruments. And he wasn't just masterful at one type of musical form. He was masterful at, you know, all of them, or, you know, lots of them. He has, I think, about more than 500 masterpieces credited to his name. And a lot of, you know, songs that we hear that are classical are most likely going to be from him. So he was like Da Vinci. He's somebody whose artwork lasted, you know, generations. It's a timeless, it's their timeless masterpieces. So the magic flute was the last opera that he had, created music for. And he actually, I think 2 months after it was first performed, he actually passed away. And I believe he initially, there's conspiracy theories going around saying that he was killed for releasing Masonic secrets within the opera itself. And that's what he was murdered. They say he died of a mysterious illness, but some conspiracy theorists claim that he was probably killed for revealing the Masonic secrets within the play, within the opera.
How do you feel about that?
I don't think he was killed for revealing the Masonic secrets in the play. I feel like maybe he was killed for its political representations as well, because I think at the time there was a lot of free thinkers and stuff like that. Like the Illuminati were actually when you think about it, they're us of the past. I'm not saying that we're evil people trying to rule the world and stuff like that, but we were people who wanted to think and talk about whatever the fuck we wanted to talk about, and we didn't want dictators threatening us to believe what they want us to believe. You know what I mean?
Well, they were the disinformation candidates, right? That's what they were of the time. If we're the disinformation people, we're the people that are putting out dangerous information.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. what the Illuminati was, right? Now I tend to not believe that the Illuminati, I disagree with you respectfully, mm-hmm. because I do think that the Illuminati is now the ones that are probably partially in control of what's going on right now.
Oh yeah.
But then, dude, look at this. Look at this little postcard. We see red and blue again, right? This chick wearing red and blue. She looks like she's some sort of royalty. And you see it right here, too. Red and blue on this dude.
I
was thinking about that. I wonder how often you see red and blue portrayed in, like, kids' cartoons. I'm thinking of, like, the Bernstein Bears. Brother Bear, right? I mean, that dude has red shirt with blue pants. You see that kind of repeated. Now that we're kind of talking about this red and blue thing, because I'm obsessed with colors and like what they represent and the symbolism that goes in with them. You see red and blue a lot in cartoons.
Well, we can assume that there's Masonic origins to the flag's creation as well. That's red, white, and blue.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Go continue with what you're saying. I just thought that was interesting that you were bringing that up right when I came back in.
Democrat, Republican, and all that. But I was going to say that, with a lot of these organizations and even like with our truth community and stuff like that, there's bad apples that fuck things up for everybody. And that just, that's just the case of things, like something starts out genuine, you have genuine good reasons behind it and stuff like that. And then it just gets infiltrated and then used for ill purposes, sure.
Of course.
This opera is essentially about initiations into the mystery school. So it's talking about someone becoming an illuminated person. And I don't know if you know much about like the whole Scarlet Whore thing.
I know a little bit, man. Not as much as some people do.
So here in this play, the Queen of Darkness, which is one of the characters.
Yeah, should we pull her up real quick?
Oh, yeah.
Right here?
Yeah. So the Queen of Darkness, she's the 5 zeros. She would represent the 5 zeros. She would represent water, right? And she would be like that tethering energy, right? And that's what she, the darkness. She wants to hold people there. And, she's represented by West, West and water and her element and stuff like that. She's jealous. She has envious energy and stuff like that because supposedly, Sarastos, who's the original, her husband who passed away, the original owner of the Sarastos temple, gave Cerastos and his people the power, his power, instead of giving it to her. So she's envious. So here, Cerasto or his people would be represent the Five Nines, fire, south, and they would represent your true self, or you becoming your true undying nature, right? Understanding your divinity and being one with it. Understanding that, yeah, you are a part of this reality, but you're not bound to, right? And that's basically what the Scarlet Whore, or, you know, this, the cube of energy, the Saturn, right? The energies of Saturn. Saturn is the teacher. He's the person trying to throw obstacles in your way to bound you to this reality.
And that's right? Also Satan, right?
Mm-hmm. So just like the Scarlet Whore, she can give you all the pleasures, right? She's the whore. She opens her legs for everybody, right?
Yeah. Would that be Venus?
Venus. I would assume, I'm not sure. I can't really say.
Okay.
On that, but yeah, so she would be the energy trying to keep you into this reality and focused on the flesh. Princess Pamina, her daughter, is represented by the 02468, or earth and water, you know, that mm-hmm. dance there, and north. She would represent us in the flesh, or our feminine energy, right? Our mm-hmm. our dealings with life, our dealings of the fleshly matter that we just have to do. We have to shit, we have to eat, you know.
She's fed up with all the bullshit that these fucking entities are feeding to us.
Yeah, and that's just us having to deal with the energies of the Queen of Darkness, our mother, right? Mother Earth. Just the, yeah. the nature of things. Not saying that she represents Earth, but like that nature of this reality.
I wouldn't say that you're wrong for saying that she represents Earth, though.
Yeah, it could be. You know, Earth could be the magnet holding us down. But Prince Tamino, represented by 97531, or Air, is the masculine energy. He's the adventurer. He's the person that's going to, you know, get himself out of his comfort zone to make something happen, right? He's the hero of the story.
Yeah, he's the protagonist. Yeah,
yeah, he's the one that's you know, becoming ascended, because that's how you become ascended, is when you want to become the hero and you want to serve. Right. And you want to help people and stuff like that. That's when you become the hero, because now you're breaking away from that self-serving attitude. You know, of course you want to live for the fruits of your labor, but you don't want to be a greedy asshole.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Not like greedy to the point where, like, you know, you got a couple spare dollars in your thing and you see somebody over, you know, some homeless guy asking for a few bucks. You rather just drive off. You know, I mean, whatever, stuff happens, you know, but.
Well, dude, look at this. So, you know, this Sarastro character, I mean, he's clearly portrayed right here. I mean, that's Sarastro right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guy at the top of the pyramid. I would say that this is probably that Queen of Darkness, because she's, you know, down on the ground. I'm not seeing the other two involved here, but they're clearly the two, like, the opposite energies, right? And
yeah. Just like with that number block, right? The high priest Cerastos, that actually, if you were going to look at it, there, that's representing, he's, you know, Mozart, and that guy would be representing them as the Freemasons.
Interesting. And what do you think these five lions represent?
I'm not sure. I mean, it could be with the, you know, the five, the law of, you know, man, you know, the star, the pentacle, and all that kind of stuff. And yeah. And also the Queen of Darkness, she's represented a lot holding a crescent moon.
Okay.
And she, a lot of the times in the play, she'll actually do the Baphomet symbol. If you type in a Queen of Darkness Baphomet, you should be able to find that representation. It's like a part of the play. So she's the enemy, right? And you would think, yeah. So why would the enemy be revered? Why would you look look at the enemy.
Some scariest pictures here. What do you got me looking up?
Oh, I'm sorry. Queen of Diamonds.
Look at this shit.
Magic flute, Queen of Darkness, Baphomet. But never mind. It should. I was hoping it would have popped up right away.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
No. But yeah, see how she's representing the moon a lot, and a lot of times in play, she'll do the whole Baphomet thing.
Yeah, right here, kind of. I mean, she's got one hand up. Her knife is pointing down.
Yeah,
crescent moon behind her. Yeah,
and her servants are. She has three ladies as her servants, and that represents the moon, because you have the waning energy, you have the maiden energy, and then you have the waxing energy. Basically, the triple goddess. So you have the moon is described as a triple goddess, right? Triple goddess moon or whatever. You have the maiden, you have the mother, and then you have the crone, and that represents the Queen of Darkness is three ladies who are servants. So it's the moon. The moon and the sun again, right?
Yeah.
That polar energy story again. So basically, these works of art, what they're basically showing is it's the same story that they've just shown in different works of art. And what this goes into, there's actually a part that's kind of messed up about this whole magic flute play. And there's a character called Monostatos. And he's the Moors, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So in this play, Monostato is like, he's somebody who's a part of Sarastos' group, and he understands higher knowledge and stuff like that, right? But see, with his higher knowledge, even though his understanding of higher knowledge, and I'm not saying I agree with this stuff, right? I'm just breaking it down. He lusted after Princess Pamina.
Mm.
That energies, right, of the flesh. The instead of looking to the energy of the spirit, even though he was a person who understood higher knowledge, but was still bound with the flesh. So that could be somebody who's a fake prophet going around preaching, God and stuff like that, while at the same time you're doing coke and off of your stripper's ass in your private jet.
yeah.
So, and then there's also other characters called Papagena and Papageno, and what these are just the regular people, and it's showing that it can be okay to be a regular person. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can still serve a greater purpose without having to be enlightened, you know. It's just showing that it's the people who I wouldn't say they're bad people, but you can show them all this evidence against all of these groups that they support and stuff like that, but they will still rather support that group out of image than by logic, you know.
Well, yeah, it's the whole idea of thinking with your heart instead of with your mind, right? You see a lot of people doing that, dude. And there's, it's the same thing to say that, excuse me, thought I was having a stroke right there. It's the same thing where, you know, there's that whole phrase where it's like, yeah, the world needs ditch diggers too. Right. There's people that go on and they achieve incredible things in their lives. And then there's some people that just don't, and there's no problem with somebody that works at McDonald's or works at Taco Bell or works at a job that they hate, like I do right now, right? I mean, I hate my job, but that doesn't mean that I don't have a greater purpose or that I don't serve a purpose in this world. Same with anyone, dude. I'm sure that 99% of people listening to this, whether it's on YouTube or whether it's on the podcast feed, they probably don't like their job and they probably don't feel like they're very significant in the world, but I think that that's kind of like a contrived, it's a contrived mindset by the elites. It's like, yeah, you gotta be like Kim Kardashian or Kanye West or fucking any of these people that are no more important than you are in the grand scheme of things. When, you know, the world's not going to stop when those people die either. But, you know, you feel like they're very important because so many people know who they are and they're just not.
Yeah, and also like saying what I was saying with these things is sometimes you can still be helpful and you don't have to be a Jedi. You can be a Han Solo.
Yeah.
And still serve the greater purpose, you know what I mean? You don't always have to be a Jedi. We need our Han Solos, you know?
Han Solo's the only one, if we're doing the original Star Wars movies, he's the only one that actually had a movie career after those movies were done. Because none of those actors and actresses did shit, but they were the stars of those movies. So yeah, dude, Han Solo, that may be the move.
Yeah. Where it shows, you know, you don't, you know, there's beauty and variation, you know, in a way. You don't want to be a sheep, but it's okay if you don't want to be some super spiritual, enlightened person either. You can go your whole life and just do it your way, and it's like, as long as you're not doing anything wrong, like, I mean, who's to really hate on it? Like, you know, don't, you know, as a spiritual person, you shouldn't be going around telling people, get on my level. Do it whenever you want to, you know, if you want to get to the spiritual height, do it on your own time, do it at your own pace, you know?
Yeah, dude, I hate when people think like when people consider themselves awake, I hate that, dude. And they're like, dude, I'm so awake right now. You know, it's like, what are you talking about, man? Like you don't know anything more than I do. You just think you do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. I think that the smarter people think that they are, or the more awake people think that they are, the more asleep they tend to be on, you know, because all that they're doing is just learning shit that they've heard, or that they, you know, maybe they do some research, but at the end of the day, even when you're researching shit, you're just reading things that other people have written down, and then you're quantifying it in your brain. That's all that's going on. You're not coming up with many thoughts, not you, Ron, but like just anyone looking into this stuff. And you're very soft-spoken about the way that you see these things. You're not someone that's out there saying, I'm right 100%. You're very, very upfront, and you're saying, dude, you know, I've done some research, but hey, this could be wrong. I'm just throwing some shit out there. And I think that that's the best way to do it, dude.
Yeah. Even with theories, a lot of the greatest inventions came up with just like ideas, you know, just thoughts.
Exactly.
you know, somebody looking at the way something works and says, hey, you know what? I can make an invention out of this shit.
Yeah.
You know, that spark of inspiration. When they come out of
All right, you know what to do. Head over to patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. We're going to be talking more about Mary Shelley and Frankenstein and her weird little husband that did some shady shit, okay? patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. I love you and I appreciate the support.